Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew. And welcome back, my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
You know, good. I'm good.
Improved, I assume.
Improved, yeah. I do believe, Andrew, that I had COVID last week.
Maybe. It is going around, as they say.
I tested negative. I tested negative, but I read this week that the latest strains of COVID are, whether it's the tests or the strains itself, are testing, you're getting false negatives. There's a higher prevalence of false negatives. And my symptoms were weird. I never really got like upper respiratory infection symptoms. I was stuffy and congested. My sinuses were stuffy and congested, but I was just foggy and tired, which has kind of been my routine with COVID. And, you know, I couldn't really work. I couldn't concentrate. I was sleeping a lot. One day I got a headache that made me feel pukey. It was definitely symptoms that are aligned with COVID. So I think it's possible I had an undiagnosed COVID bout. But it was pretty bad, man. It was like...
You seemed fine.
It was like... Well, I know you said that when you came over. And I was like, that's hilarious because I feel so bad. When you came over to get the card, you were like, you look fine. And I was like... I mean, there's no way I could have recorded a show. I mean, I could have sat here, but it would not have been a good show. So
we had a great show. Me and Frank hung out and we talked about some of the watches that deserve a 50th anniversary. Some modern era watches. With a couple cheats. I took pages from your book and cheated quite a bit.
I did hear a couple of your cheats. I think that's fun. I appreciate you doing that in my honor. No, I thought the show was terrific. You know, I did the editing and the publishing of that show. So I wound up listening to, I didn't listen to all of it, but I did listen to, I'd say, about 75% of it. And I thought it was terrific. I thought you guys had some interesting picks.
There were some good picks.
I think so. You guys both surprised me. I think Frank and I tend to have fairly, at least consistent, watch opinions. You and I obviously differ, I think, perhaps in an affected way over the course of the last 6 years. Mm-hmm. With that said,
because none of y'all know what we actually think,
right? I was actually really impressed with both of the watches you guys picked. I thought you did a great job. That was a fun show, and thank you, Frank, for stepping in for me.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out and taking a baby break and kicking it with me.
Yeah,
saving the day, as it were. Because I can tell you, listening to me yammer for an hour, that would have been really unpleasant.
Yeah, I think, you know, that time we both had COVID, Will did that. He did a really good job.
Yeah,
with that.
Man, we were both fucked up. I forgot about that because I was talking to Sam about it before the show. I was like, Everett's going to miss his first show, but I forgot about that. The dual COVID episode where we were both like dead, yeah. D-E-D, dead.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, that was my second missed show, which I'm okay with. It didn't make me feel, there was no sadness or anything. In fact, I was too sick to feel sad. I was just like,
you were just, you threw a book at me.
Get this out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like Wednesday morning. And I was just like, there's no fucking way. It's just not possible. So
that's okay.
Alas, here we are a week later. I feel fine. I feel fine.
And you look the same.
Yep. Yep. My lawn is coming in, Andrew. I did overseed. I did thatch, drill seed, and then overseed my lawn. What? It's been about 11 days, 12 days, something like that.
You had somebody do it. I think that's important to differentiate.
I did have someone do the thatching and the
aerating and the drill seating.
And the drill seating, that's right. Yeah. So I didn't do, I was going to rent equipment to do that, and I decided against that just because it doesn't actually...
Doesn't save you any money.
It doesn't save you any money. And the amount of time.
You need a trailer to like go pick it up, and you need to haul it back and forth. And
that's right.
Just pay somebody who already has the equipment.
That's right. So for four...
Or buy it yourself.
For $400, I had the whole lawn aerated, thatched, and overseeded. And it was about... It was about...
Did they do the back, too?
They did not. I didn't have them do the back. It was very ugly, Andrew.
It was mucky. It looked like... I just top-dressed my yard, and it looked like my yard.
It reminded me of the fairgrounds after a fair, you know.
After a rodeo.
Right, yeah. When everything clears out. I was like, oh, my God. But now, it's all, you know, what, 12 days later, and I got grass. I mean, it's still...
It's like patchy
thin baby grass, but it's coming in everywhere.
It's post hair plug. It hasn't yet fully germinated and grown up.
I think I'm about 10 days away from golf course.
So, you're close. Yeah,
maybe 2 weeks.
And I top dressed my front yard today. I had a yard of turf soil delivered, which when I read the ingredients of it, it was like it was a weird ingredient list. There's shrimp proteins in there. Mm. Kelp.
Yeah, kelp is a big one in lawn maintenance.
There was one other kind of like, I don't recall what it was. It doesn't matter.
Was it mushroom compost?
Guano. No, it was guano. Oh,
that makes sense. Like bag guano.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
In their ingredient list. And I was like, that's all over my hands, man. Like, gross.
Do they sterilize it or no?
I'd expect not because it's dirt. Yeah. So I top dressed my whole front yard. I was out there with my leveling rake and my wheelbarrow and top dressed and seeded.
And you put flagstones in your front yard, which I've been asking you to do for 2.5 years.
I did, and I don't like it, but I kind of have to because I have to park the trailer right up against the edge of the driveway, and there's no walkway to my front door but for the driveway. And I sent a picture to my wife of like, I just moved, most of a yard of soil into the front yard. It's a watering, it's seeded. The front yard looks terrible and it's about to look great. And she goes, how are we going to get to the front door?
Got to install Everett's flagstones. I think you need fewer of them.
I agree.
You need four or five.
I need different shape. I just need to go get some square ones, dig out a little path.
Yeah,
sand them and drop them in. But that was what I could do today so there weren't muddy feet coming into my house. Because those flagstones existed in my curb strip for whatever reason. They were like, I don't know. There was some weird decisions made by the previous owners of this home. Like, as an example, we had a perfectly functioning trash compactor. The residents had a perfectly functioning trash compactor. They didn't like it. They removed it, threw it away, and then didn't fill the void.
Yeah.
I still haven't filled the void, so there's not a lot of trash to be talked, but that was a decision that they made.
Yeah. Trash compactors are weird because they're so nice to have. I've got one in my house. I love it, but they are very expensive.
And the one that matches all of our appliances has been on back order for 3 years.
It's one of those things.
So it's like I can get a not matching one, or I can just put a wine cooler in there. I think that's what I'm going to do.
You can get one that you could just put a cupboard on. It's one of those things that I've never had before. I've never considered getting. I love that I have, and I wouldn't want to do without. But if that broke, I'm not sure I'd get a new one.
Yeah, but what would you do? I mean, there's now a void in your cabinetry.
Yeah, I put in a wine cooler.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
Andrew, we're not here to talk about trash compactors, flagstones, yard maintenance, or anything of the sort. Rather, we're here to talk about watches, and watches we should talk about because, once again, tis the season. Once again, we've got too many watches to talk about.
And we're not going to get to them at all. It's fine. Because we're in the... I initially thought, I was like, oh, we're kind of in that like lull Watches and Wonders. Oh, no, not Watches and Wonders. Geneva Watch Days. We're in like a lull of things. And then, you know, I get digging into it and I'm like, oh, there, we're not in a lull. There's some things happening. And I'm going to start because I always start.
You're going to start because you want to take one of the ones we both picked.
Is that the case?
I don't know.
I'm about to surprise you. I want to start with the Formex Stratos UTC. And this watch intrigued me immediately when I saw it because it looks super Formex and not all at once. This is like a 70s GMT small seconds, but not chrono, but not small seconds. It's a chronograph. Like there's so much happening that you kind of can't wrap your mind around it. And it doesn't immediately look like Formex, right? You see a top-down picture of this, and this is not immediately to me a Formex watch. And then you look at it for a moment and it is all the Formex things. It's super tooly. It's utilitarian. It's well-designed. It's proportionally perfect. The color scheme on it is great. And it's different. It's different from what I think most of the Formex catalog is, right? We have a chronograph GMT, which is in and of itself pretty interesting. And it's coming in at Formex prices, right? It is, I scrolled past it. About $4,000.
Yeah, these are spending.
On a bracelet or on a strap, it's using the ETA 2892 movement with an added Dubois Duprat GMT functionality to it. I'm not super sure how they're rebuilding and retooling this movement because it's really unique to take a GMT movement, add a chronograph functionality, 41 millimeter case. Here's the real excitement about all this functionality in a single traveler's watch. It's 12 millimeters thick. We have a chronograph GMT at 12 millimeters, 46 and a half lug to lug. This is like a compact little, like, this is like carrying a snub nose 380 in your pocket, right? Like this is just packed full of functionality, super compact, thin for both of these complications. And it looks like it should be a vintage watch, right? Like this is straight out of the 70s when I looked at it, which is why it kind of didn't seem Formex to me. Formex is so super modern, super utilitarian, super tooly, like very overbuilt. And this is not that when I look at it, especially when you put it on leather. Like this is dope.
Yeah, I love it, Andrew. So you said something which is maybe not accurate, but I think what you meant was, so you called this a chronograph GMT. This is not a chronograph.
Oh,
but it does look like a chronograph, right? And it doesn't look like a chronograph necessarily on the dial, but it's got these pushers. It's got a pusher at 2 o'clock and a pusher at 4 o'clock, which makes it look like a chronograph, but rather it's this Duprat UTC, this traveler complication that they've integrated, which is really pretty clever. So this actually operates a little bit like what I understand the Patek Aquanaut 5164 operates, which is to say that it allows you to use the pusher to jump the local hour hand backwards and forwards in 1 hour increments. And then on the left side of the case, there is another pusher for quick adjusting the date, which is convenient in a traveler's watch. This is really a pretty dynamic watch that Formex has come up with here. I'm I'm kind of wild about this thing, Andrew.
That's what I mean when it's like a, it's like you top down, it doesn't seem like Formex, and you dive into it and it's straight Formex. It's like, how much technology and how much cool shit can we push into this watch? Which is very Formex.
You know, I actually think it does look very Formex. My initial reaction when I saw this is, oh man, that is Formex all around. But I think I understand what you're saying. The bezel, I think I'm not crazy about the bezel. So the bezel is a stainless steel bezel, and the 24-hour time is on the bezel, so it actually gives you, what, triple time perhaps. So it's stainless steel, and it's like got a resin inlay that's been polished back to reveal the stainless steel digits. I don't love that look. I think that they could have done any number of things with this that I would have liked better.
I think that holds that 70s feel of the rest of the watch.
It does.
Yeah, that case shape is like straight 72.
I'm with you there, and I'm okay with it. But with that said, the case and the angles and the way the bracelet joins up with the watch, this feels very Formex to me. It's more expensive than other Formex, but it's...
It's doing more shit.
Got a crazy movement. This thing is really fucking cool.
I ask how you feel about the fonts?
I don't like them. I don't like any of the fonts here. Which...
Weird.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't super like them either. Because you take this like very 70s inspired and true to that case shape and angles design... And incorporate like a 2006,
yeah,
kind of bubble font,
yeah,
dial font to it, and I'm with you.
It's almost like a 70s track and field font. Anyway,
On the bezel, I like the bezel font. It's the dial font that I'm not with.
Yeah, I actually don't love. Yeah, I don't love the fonts. With that said, I do really enjoy the watch. I enjoy what they're doing here. The other thing I notice is that this watch looks like it's going to be really big, and it's just not. It's 41 mm-hmm. millimeters wide for a square case, so it's probably going to wear a little chunky. 12 millimeters thick with what they're doing here is kind of crazy. This thing's rad.
It's short lug to lug, too. What, 46 and a half? Like, mm-hmm. It's a little squat. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. It's gonna wear really well. Is it 100 meters of water resistance, Andrew? Yeah, 100 meters of water resistance with this multi-layered stainless steel case. It's got some really dynamic stuff on the case, too. I think you almost have to give it a second look to really appreciate it. I'm going to complain about the Endlink. I think that the Endlink is not as well machined as it should be. For this bracelet, if they had machined that end link just a little bit better.
They needed to make it just a flat link. There's no need for a faux five link transitioning into a three link bracelet. That's a silly decision.
I'm fine with the ridge. I'm fine with the ridge, but they should have gone straight across with the ridge, and they should have done the actual machining at the ridge should have been nicer. That's my position on this. That's a miss for me.
I accept your position. I don't like the faux five link machining on that end link.
Yeah,
going into a three link bracelet. They're like, why?
I don't think you need the faux, that engraved bit on the oyster to line up with the oyster. I don't think you need that bit. I don't mind the ridge though. The ridge I think is okay. So if they had just maintained that ridge flat across and had the edge of the ridge be sharper. Anyway, this is really very ticky-tacky stuff here, but
when you gotta find reasons to complain about Formex, you gotta get deep.
That's a very cool watch, probably the coolest watch release of the week, I would say.
Maybe.
I think you started.
Did I use slurp your pick?
Well, you did, and that's okay. But I do think that that's probably the coolest thing we're gonna talk about today. Actually, there's one other thing we're gonna talk about that I'm gonna wait to talk about. Ooh. That I think is really, really epic.
Gonna hold it for the end.
Yeah. yeah, I think so, Andrew, or at least for a while. But I am going to talk about something that I do think is cool. AquaStar.
Oh, I knew that this was going to be you were choosing next.
Aquastar released a chronograph these last couple of weeks, and it's actually a chronograph. So Aquastar is the zombie brand run by Rick Murray.
Crazy, we're talking about him in back-to-back weeks together.
That's right. Synchron. What?
That's why we've talked about Aquastar, because we've talked about Synchron.
Yeah. And Aquastar does these just absolutely beautiful skin divers. They're expensive, but they're very nice. You know, the Aquastar was one of the Jacques Cousteau brands. Anyway, old Aquastars are a thing of beauty, and the new ones really are very faithful, I'd say. So they introduced, this is the 60th anniversary of a watch that they released, unsurprisingly, 60 years ago.
What?
Called the AirStar. Now, the AirStar, you'd be forgiven for thinking the original AirStar 60 years ago. You'd be forgiven for saying, this looks a lot like an Aquastar. Because it does. With that said, it is a chronograph, and given the name, this was definitely targeted at pilots. This was a pilot's chronograph, but it's got that H case, that skin diver H case that you'd expect the skin diver. It's got an internal tack meter, bidirectional 60-minute bezel. So it's doing a lot of things. They've re-released the AirStar in not a one-to-one, which I kind of like. It's a full DLC watch. It is an H case, what I'd call a skin diver style H case, still a 60 minute bidirectional rotating bezel, an internal tack meter scale. And it's all black. Polished black dial, DLC dial, polished black DLC bezel, and sort of a circular brushed top flank on this H case. Gosh, man. This thing's pretty cool.
Except that it looks like a can of tuna.
Oh, well.
I understand it's a 7700 series case or movement, but holy dog shit, man. 16 millimeters thick.
Yeah, so 14.
39 millimeter case, 49 lug to lug, 16 thick, 14 without the crystal. But that is, you look at the profile of this, and this is a tuna can.
Yeah, no, it is. It is a pretty thick watch. I do believe this is, it has 200 meters of water resistance, though.
It does.
There is one other issue. It's a 21 millimeter lug width, which, whatever.
Why?
I think this thing is pretty cool.
It's a beautiful watch.
And I think it's actually probably going to wear fairly well. But it is. Yeah, it's a bit of a chunky watch, and that's okay. These are $1,890 during a launch period with a $2,790 retail price if they fail to sell it. They're only making 300 of these. I think at $1,890, this is a terrific value.
Yeah, you're in the zone.
I think at $2,790, it's an okay value.
I think it's a miss at that price point, but
yeah, it doesn't go all the way to miss for me, but it is definitely less attractive at almost $3,000. But at under 2,000 for a 7753 from Aquastar, I think this is pretty cool.
I mean, that's the price point they should be at. Is that 2,000 to, I don't know, 2,300 zone? Because it's a great watch. Everything about it's cool.
I think so. I think so.
It'd be cooler with a DLC bracelet.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Although, yeah, the H case,
black rubber's good.
Yeah.
But it'd be cooler with a DLC bracelet. Like, put a shark mesh on there.
Yeah. No, it would look great. If a DLC shark mesh would look great here.
That would be fucking cool.
Yeah. This thing's pretty cool. Yeah. 16 millimeters is like, oof.
This vintage AquaStar example that they've used in the photographs is like perhaps the best preserved vintage watch I've ever seen.
Yeah, so we're looking at a Fratello article that you will be able to click on in the show notes. That is a absolutely stunning watch.
Also, I don't super dig that when I think about like a 60th anniversary, when I think 60 years ago, I'm like, oh, from the 40s.
Nope.
No, we're like pushing the 70s at this point.
Yeah. I mean, before too long, Andrew, things are going to be doing their 50th anniversary for things that happened in my life.
Yeah.
That is horrifying. And it's not that far away. I mean, I'm 42, right? So it's not like next year, but it's going to happen.
No, but you're going to be in the decade.
Yeah, there's going to be some fucking thing I remember from my kid, and it's going to be like, oh, He-Man celebrating its 50th anniversary. I'm going to be like, fuck my life.
Yeah, no, I don't super dig that.
The 50th anniversary of Thundercats.
Because you're like, oh, 60-year anniversary, but the Airstar. I was like, I wonder why they're like doing like kind of spacey aeronautics from, you know, the 40s. That's kind of weird. 1964.
Right.
Don't super dig that. Yeah. You know what I do dig, though? I dig the things that Doxa is doing right now.
Oh, interesting.
Doxa's doing some things...
Before you move on. Okay. Before you move on. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles...
I don't want to talk about
that. The comic book started in 1987, excuse me, which means... The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles will be celebrating their 40th anniversary in 3 years, Andrew.
Yeah, I don't super like that.
That's insane. Okay.
I don't like that.
Carry on. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
I don't know why you'd say things like that.
You're just
trying to be hurtful?
Yeah, well, I mean...
Like to yourself, to me, to everyone listening.
I am what I am.
Now you're Popeye. Probably celebrating his 100th anniversary this year.
Probably. I don't have to worry about it. I don't remember. But Popeye wasn't new when I was a kid.
No, but it was a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I say I like what Doxa has been doing. Because Doxa, up until, I don't know, fairly recently, has been a brand of 3 watches. 9 colorways, and that's what we do. Every once in a while, we'll release a Jacques Cousteau. We do a special edition, and that's just kind of our thing. Two years ago, they introduced a new, wholly new watch into their catalog. They do special editions all the time, but this special edition, I think, is really interesting. They are doing a limited run... beautiful icy blue azure for a Caribbean retailer, The Art of Time. They're doing it's at 50, 100, something in that neighborhood, a super short run of a boutique purchase only colorway for this Caribbean watch retailer. I think it's super cool. It's not a color that I'm super into. It's a really common color. It's this icy blue azure, as it's being called, in the Sub 200, which is their newest SKU in their catalog, their newest watch in their catalog. And I think that's super cool. It's interesting to me to see Doxa kind of dabbling in what can we do to keep up with the ever-changing market, because Doxa is not Rolex. Doxa can't have 9 watches in a handful of colorways and just chug on along. They got to do some creative stuff, and I think the special editions, the Jacques Cousteau's, the maps, the
dirt pits.
Yeah, they did a Clancy, didn't they?
It's not Clancy, it's Clive Cussler.
Yeah, Cussler, yeah. They're doing these kind of...
I mean, shit, maybe they did Clancy too, but not that I know of.
They're doing these like very niche watches. And I think doing something like this is really interesting. I think we're going to see some cool stuff happen in the Doxa orbit in the next couple years.
You know,
not necessarily to like modernize or to like to keep up, but to just remain relevant. Because you can't just have three watches in nine colorways and stay competitive. And that's what Doxa needs to do, is they need to stay competitive. There's not enough people buying Prospect dive watches at the $2,000 to $3,000 price point to remain relevant and competitive.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see, like, this is an indicator of some things to come, right? They're not just doing a weird one-off limited edition, hey, in-house, we think this is really cool, it's kind of related to us. They're branching out to like, oh, we do like dive watches, and the Caribbean is where people dive because it's warm enough to dive comfortably. This is interesting. I think this is an indicator. And especially in the 200, right? It's their new hot shit, affordable. I mean, this is, it's priced aligned with the 200. This is what they're doing to get non-watch people, like people who don't care about the Prospect, people who don't care about the legacy, into Doxa.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You said a thing that Doxa was three watches just a few years ago, and I think that that's actually fairly accurate without being perfectly accurate. But I actually, you know, the sub 200, I'm not a huge fan of this watch. I don't like the way it looks. I don't dislike the way it looks, but it just doesn't feel like a Doxa to me.
It's not, but
it's got some interesting, but I think it, you know, Rick Murray was sort of instrumental in sort of bringing Doxa back in the late 90s, I believe. I think partially because of his experience with the Clive Cussler novels and just, you know, like this watch needs to come back. And he worked with the Jenny family. Rick Murray got sort of boxed out a few years ago. It was a little dramatic. There was some like tea and some shade, perhaps, as a result of this thing. It winds up being a nothing burger. Synchron lives on. Rick Murray lives on, Doxa lives on, but I think that Doxa has done a good job at becoming a bigger company,
mm-hmm.
a more nimble company.
I don't know if I'd go with nimble yet. They're dabbling.
More nimble. They
released a whole new SKU, yeah.
They've done a good job sort of scaling up the business without it getting irky, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you. This is okay. This is fine. This is a beautiful watch. I did think, I said, well, this is a limited release collaboration with a Saint Martin retailer. What in the world? I guess Saint Martin is in the Caribbean, but it's part of the Kingdom of the Netherlands.
Yeah, it's Dutch. Yeah. That whole region is like still controlled by weird empires. Like the only remaining like imperialism is in the Caribbean.
It's a pretty watch, man. It's definitely an attractive watch. Probably
it's a great colorway. What excites me is that it's an indicator that Doxa is maybe dipping their toes in the water to like do some shit that isn't kind of unusual Clive Cussler, Jacques Cousteau limited runs.
Timex.
Ooh, do me.
Timex last year released a collaboration with James Brand. When it came out, everybody agreed that it was a very cool watch. What it was a 9075, Miyota 9075 titanium GMT watch with a sort of Explorer 2 bezel and this fun sort of angular chopped case. Beautiful. Everybody said, this is way too expensive, and James Rand is kind of weird. And so it's probably not going to sell. But it sold out immediately, and you couldn't get one.
at market price. You could get one, but you're going to hurt for it.
So it was neither too expensive, nor was it a bad collaboration. With that said, Timex just a couple weeks ago released a watch that looks very, very similar, not identical.
Suspiciously similar,
which costs a little bit less money, $575 instead of $750, and is not a James Rand collaboration. Rather, this is just a regular release in Timex's catalog. This is a grade 2 titanium GMT with a quote-unquote Japanese GMT movement. What that means is almost certainly a Seiko NH34A movement, giving you a second time zone. The NH34 is a little bit less desirable, I'd say, than the 9075. It's certainly cheaper. It's very cool. This is grade 2 titanium, power reserve of 41 hours, 41 millimeter case, GMT automatic GMT function, 200 meters of water resistance. It's fucking rad.
Yes.
It's rad.
This is what we've been asking for from Timex for the last 6 years. Timex is not just dabbling in the affordable cool shit category. They have fully stepped up and are filling the Seiko upmarket void.
It's awesome. This is a fucking awesome watch.
This is dope. If it had a bracelet, it'd be even better. It doesn't, and that's fine.
It's fine.
I accept. I don't like, but I accept.
You know, it's 11 and a half millimeters.
Mm-hmm. This is dope. This is what we all collectively have been asking for of Timex since their reintroduction of the automatic movements, since them dabbling in like cool watch people shit. This is it. We're here. Timex is here, and Timex is going to continue to be doing cool shit.
Yeah. Yeah. This is cool.
This is the charcuterie board. Like, there is more to come.
You say charcuterie?
How else would you say it?
Charcuterie?
That's not how you say it.
Charcuterie is pretty fantastic too. That's like a smorgasbord of coochie.
That's not it. That's what you want. All right.
I really like the dial. Hold on, I'm not done.
No, we're not gonna move.
Hold on, I'm not done. I really like the dial. The dial is delicious.
Yes.
I really like the GMT hand. This big sort of square block.
It almost looks like a second hand. Like, they disguise it really well because it is the same shape as their second hand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I like how blocky it is. I'm done. But I just
the colors
to say,
are great. It's a black dial. It's a white loom. There's no fotina. The only color is the GMT hand and the GMT acknowledgement at the 6 o'clock, and they're in yellow. And it's a great contrast without being.
We made a GMT. Does Boulder make a bracelet for the Venture? I think they do.
I don't know if they do. And Boulder uses grade 2. The color match might be there.
I think they do. In fact, I'm looking at one right now. 20 millimeter lug size. I wonder.
It might be a touch lighter. Oh. I think the blasting is a little different.
Well,
the date hand or the date window on this is like invisible.
Yeah.
You just have a visible date. This is far and away my favorite Timex release of the year. It will remain so. Timex is doing such cool shit. Like they've they saw the vacuum. They were a little bit slow to fill it.
Well, they still haven't filled the vacuum. They're just sort of poking things into the hole. But
they're plugging it. They're plugging the vacuum.
Andrew, what's next?
Okay, next up for me. The company that caused the vacuum.
I hate all the rest of your picks, just so you know.
I hate you. I don't even like you coming to my house once a week.
That's super rude.
Yeah, it's just the reality of the place that we live. The Seiko Presage GMT Urushi Lacquer Dial SPB447. So this is a lacquered dial Presage. And it is gorgeous. It like I should buy one right now, because this is when I saw the first top down picture of this watch, I was stunned. I didn't even click on the link. I just looked at it. Clicked on the link, did all the zooming, did all the looking. This is this gorgeous lacquered black dial. White markers, gold GMT hand, gold second hand, gold minute markers on your minute track. It is absolutely stunning. It's a 6R54 movement, 20 millimeter leather strap. I don't want a bracelet on this. 40.2 case, 12.4 thick. 48 lug to lug. Like, this is just all of the Presage things that we've always liked, right? Like, the Presage line is just phenomenal all the time. Every watch you see is just pure sex. And this is the pinnacle. I don't know how they beat this not guilt watch. This is just it.
It's a beautiful watch. Do you know anything about Urushi lacquer, Andrew?
Very little. By the way, it's 1,850 euros, so $6 based on the current exchange rates.
Urushi is a sap from the Urushi tree, and they make this natural lacquer from it. And the way it gets applied, so they use Urushi in a number of things, fountain pens being one of them. So the nicest fountain pens in the world are painted with Urushi lacquer. But it requires you to apply this lacquer, this natural lacquer, to a hard surface, and then basically wipe it all the way off, allow it to cure, and then polish it. And so it takes to paint something, to lacquer something with Urushi takes months, right? Because you can't hurry it. It just takes the amount of time it takes, and it takes hundreds and hundreds, maybe not hundreds, dozens of very, very thin layers. It just takes forever to do this. Look. This has the same movement as the Alpinist GMT. So you've got this handmade Urushi artist, you know, like a genuine craftsman has painted this, and then you check it on a 6R54 in a 12.5 millimeter case. Like, I don't know, man.
This is gorgeous.
I don't know. On a 6R54?
They could do better. I don't disagree, but they did it. They did it with the Urushi dial.
It's got a
maybe a
movement with like visible machining marks on it with an Urushi lacquer dial. I don't get it.
Don't care. They spent the money on the dial. It's it's fucking gorgeous.
How much more money does Seiko need to spend to give me a dope movement? Like, I mean, could they give
this is not a limited release. This is just a new available release.
I mean, could you make this $2,500 and give me something other than a 6R54? It's got a 6R movement in it.
I don't care.
Fuck you, Psycho.
I don't care.
I agree with you, Andrew, that it's gorgeous. I cannot.
Put your own movement in it.
I cannot.
This is gorgeous. I don't disagree with any of your positions.
I think it's a beautiful watch. I pulled it up. It was on my list. And I saw it at a 6R54, and I was like, you have got to be fucking joking.
I'm fine with this watch with a, like, display movement in it that doesn't even run. I don't need to tell the time on this watch. I just like the way it looks.
It's got a 6R54. Hamilton re-released the Murph in 38 millimeters.
They sure did.
With
a bracelet.
They've done this before. The Murph came out. So when the Murph first came out, it was 42 millimeters. It's really cool watch, but it's just a little too big. They released it in 38. Everybody's like, yes, it doesn't have the Morse code on the seconds hand. Who cares? This watch is terrific. They finally did a bracelet for it, and the bracelet's great. The bracelet's great. They also released this with a white grain dial. I don't know. I don't like the white dial.
I don't either. I usually do, but this is a miss for me.
It's not bad. It's fine, but whatever. But it's really cool that this finally has a bracelet. I think that's it.
That's what they needed. The Murph has always needed a bracelet.
Now, I will say the white dial has this like sort of fautina. It's fine.
It's not exactly fautina either. It's sort of the in-between. It's neither committed to fautina nor is it not fautina.
They're creating contrast with the white dial with the tina. It's fine.
Yeah, and Tina's not doing them any favors here.
It's pretty. It's not ugly.
Just keep them white.
It's got an H10. The bracelet's good. This is not a spectacular bracelet. But it's a Hamilton bracelet, which means it's going to be good.
Yeah, you're going to like it.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
You're going to like it.
And it looks really good. It fits the watch. It's $1,100.
Are you ready for my next thing?
That's all I have to say about it.
We have a new cocktail time too. Hmm. Nighttime in Tokyo. And it is gorgeous.
Yeah, beautiful.
It is a... So, as per the cocktail times, they pair with a bar to kind of recreate the feel, look, and idea of these cocktails. They partnered with a bar called Star Bar in Ginza. And the owner, Hisashi Kishi, who, of note, was the first bartender to receive the Contemporary Master Craftsman Award in Japan, which is meaningful. And I don't know what it takes for a bartender to get there, but he got there. So this is a recreation of Nighttime in Tokyo dial. It comes in two sizes. It is a 30 millimeter and a 40 and a half millimeter. And this dial is like, it looks like a dark black cocktail with two ice cubes kind of slowly melting into it as viewed from the top down.
Yeah, I think it's actually like sort of a reflection. I think that it's like an exposed silver grain under a smoky black dial. So I believe the reflection changes as you move the watch. I could be wrong on that. I haven't seen these in person, obviously.
No, I think so, because it's got gold markers, gold hands. And as you look at all the pictures, it changes throughout. And it's just lovely.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It looks like ice, but the ice texture kind of migrates around on the dial. And these, I mean, they're cocktail times, right? They're,
well, so,
you know, they're $650. They're
both limited. I actually think the 30 millimeter is the more interesting of these two. It's probably too small for me to wear. With that said, it has it's crystal. It's got a hard lex crystal that it looks like it's like a diamond set bezel or stone set bezel, but it's not. The hard lex crystal has been cut on the underside of the crystal to give it sort of like a whiskey glass appearance. Like
engraving, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a cut crystal, hard lex crystal. Now, hard lex, not a terrific material, and a box hard lex crystal I think is problematic. With that said, this is really a stunning thing. I've never seen this before.
No, it's new, but it's the cocktail time.
No, right? I mean, I've never seen that like cut, that a crystal cut like this on the underside is what I mean.
No, I've not either. And I'm not sure that we will again, because I think there's probably some inherent problems with it.
Yeah, I think doing this in hard lex is a problem in and of itself. You know, I like hard lex. I think it's a cool material, but it scratches. And
this is a dress watch. It's designed to be a dress watch that you're not going to...
You're going to have to baby it.
Yeah, you're going to baby it. Yeah. And it's $650, so it's... Like, even if you don't, it's not catastrophic.
Yeah.
But also, no one's wearing the 30 millimeter. I think I wish they would have included that in both the 30 and the 40.
Yeah, maybe it's a cost thing. I don't know. It's a gorgeous watch.
Because in the 40, I think I'd buy it.
All right, Andrew. I've got two more watches I would like to talk about. One of them quickly. Both of them quickly. But I can split them up. I'm not saying I won't. The first is a Cabot watch company. Actually, just CWC, but formerly Cabot Watch. Do you know anything about Cabot?
I know some things about...
So CWC was started in the 70s by a fellow named Ray Meller. I think Ray, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Sorry, Ray. I think Ray Meller was the like brand. He was the brand guy, like a Mike Pearson, perhaps, for Hamilton in the United Kingdom, in the 70s. And like many, many businesses, Hamilton sort of shuttered in the 70s and the late 70s and really discontinued its business. Ray Meller was like, well, these watches are cool. And we have these contracts. We have government contracts, MOD contracts.
Yeah, we're stuck. You got to deal with us.
And so he started a business named after the explorer, John Cabot, to make watches to sell to the MOD. And also... military surplus suppliers and embedded press. He was making institutional watches. They released this week, I think, kind of a weird watch, but I like it. It's weird in a way I like it. This is a watch that looks vintage, but it's not. So what this is a... asymmetric military style chronograph watch. They call it the 6BB-WR. This is a rendition of a classics pilot chronograph from the 70s, a RAF watch that Hamilton actually made an example of. Beautiful, beautiful watch. And you can still find these Hamilton MOD pilots chronographs. They're very cool, but they're pricey. This is a very similar watch. It is a, but it's not a vintage watch. So this watch has been remade by a couple companies. Hamilton has remade this. And they tend to be kind of small, diminutive, and really sort of antique-y. This is not that. It is vintage in its aesthetic. They use the vintage CWC. It's got a big broad arrow. It's very simple text. But if you get close to this thing, it's very modern. It's very modern, which is why I say it's not really, it's kind of weird. you'd expect this watch to be sort of a dainty repro type of thing. Instead, this is a 42 millimeter asymmetric fixed strap bar chronograph, fully modern chronograph with 100 meters of water resistance, and a fantastic automatic Sellita SW510 movement with 63 hours of power reserve, Niveflex mainspring, 28.8 vibrations. And it's been adjusted to run probably something close to Costco, although they're not saying it's got Cosc.
It's probably there. It would just be expensive to call it so.
This is a watch that you can wear underwater, a chronograph that you can wear underwater in any environment, fixed lug bars. This is a working chronograph.
This is a specced 1963.
This thing is really freaking cool, man. Yes. It's big. I think it's
42 and a half.
I think it's probably too big, but you know what?
It's not 40. It's 42. It's not 42 and a half.
It's 1,875 pounds, meaning 2,230 euros, meaning probably about 2,400 bucks.
It's a little thick. It's 15 millimeters thick.
Yeah, it's 14, a fucking automatic chronograph. They're all thick, and it's got 100 meters of water resistance and a screw-down crown.
Yeah.
This thing is really cool.
This is an interesting CWC release.
But it's a serious watch. This isn't it's a beautiful watch, but this is a serious watch too. I think this is such a funny, weird release, but I kind of love it, man. I kind of love it.
No, I'm with you because CWC is so very much like really simple, really tool. Why did you turn your flashlight on? What are you looking at?
I think it just happens. It like sometimes I click
super
the
utilitarian,
back of my
case. And I'd expect a release like this. Like this isn't shocking at like 30 meters of water resistance or yeah, 50, but it's 100. A fully specced
with a screw down crown.
Like this is an interesting release.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? CWC has the watch that you'd expect them to release here, right? They have vintage, and frankly, I think Hamilton makes a vintage one too. So if you want this watch in a more elegant, so the Hamilton has the khaki Pilot Pioneer Mechanical, which is 40 hand wound. So if you want the sexy aesthetic one, you can get it. But if you want the serious, don't fuck with me.
If you want the one that does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it. And CWC is such a baller, like no bullshit. If you're wearing a CWC, like if you see a CWC in the wild, that person knows exactly what the fuck they're wearing and why they're wearing it.
And I think I've been saying fixed spring bars, which isn't a thing. It's got fixed
lugs.
Lugs, that's right.
Yeah, you've said several variations. All of which kind of like got you there.
You know what I mean?
Everyone knew. No one was questioning it. I didn't call you out on any of the variations.
And no Fotina.
No.
And no Fotina.
Yeah, because that's a big CWC problem. So much Fotina.
This thing is terrific.
Every time I look at CWC's website, I'm like, man, I want a Cabot.
White pad printing with the green loom. This thing's terrific.
Buy compacts. Like, this is what the 1963 wants to be.
It's just cool. It's just a serious watch.
It's the serious.
Fixed quick release spring bars. Go ahead.
Now I'm confused. Where are we at?
We have time for two more watches, Andrew, okay. or just one more if you don't want to do another one.
I want to do a really quick one. We have the new instrument-inspired Bell & Ross BR-03 Horizon. I love the BR-03. It's one of the most comfortable watches I've ever worn. When I put one on, it created a problem for me because of how comfortable it wore. How like everything was just right about it. This is just a new colorway iteration of the BR-03. And I think it's really fun. They're really leaning into aviation instruments. This watch dial is designed after an Attitude what's the word I'm looking for?
Instrument?
Yeah, an instrument. Showing blue. It's an avionics instrument with a blue.
A horizon readout.
Yeah, a horizon readout. You know, the north half is blue, the south half is black, to be able to indicate your attitude of your aircraft in flight. This one doesn't adjust. I think it'd be really cool if it was like a floating dial.
If they could have figured out some way to do the pitch.
Like, yeah, to like float your dial.
And making an actual artificial horizon.
And that would be really cool. They didn't do that because that would make it significantly more expensive and probably right, like probably 4 millimeters thicker.
Yes. As it is, you know, this is a BR-03, so it's like 10 millimeters.
It's, yeah, thick. It's like 10 half, I think.
Yeah, 10 six.
But it's a really lovely light blue. It's a great black. It's a BR-03 with a cool instrument flair to it. I like it. I think it's a cool release. I like it. I don't like most Bell and Ross, but this, the BR-03 line, they're doing some cool stuff with it. I really dig this release because I think it's fun. It harkens back to their aviation inspiration. In a way that's not like we now have an instrument.
Well, I'm with you. This is a terrific watch, and I do think that the internal disc rotates to indicate the hour. So, there are times where it looks sort of diagonal.
But it doesn't float.
It doesn't float. No, you're right. But it does move. Which, I
want it to float.
How much are these?
$5,000. Yeah, they're $5,000. They're BR-03 prices. That's you know, kind of a Bell and Ross thing, is they don't, some of their special editions get, you know, double their typical rate, but generally they're, you know, in the zone. They're limited to 1,999 pieces. So if you want one, you're gonna be able to get one. But I think they're fun.
I think they're fun too. Hanhart.
Oh, interesting. That's the one you're going with.
Do you know what this is, dude?
I do a little. What I'm saying is that there were some other things on our list that I'm surprised you went with this over that.
You know, we get to do whatever we want.
It's our show.
It's our show. We get to do whatever we want. Hanhart released a watch they're calling the Preventor HD12. Despite the name, I do not believe this has any prophylactic qualities. Maybe is sexy enough that it's likely to do the opposite.
Yeah, it will cause things to happen.
All right. This is, aesthetically speaking, the least interesting watch that we're going to talk about. It looks like a Murph.
Mm-hmm. With some Explorer flavors.
Yes, it looks like a Murph. We've got cathedral hands. We've got Murph. This looks like a Murph. But HD12, Preventor HD12. HD12 is a type of steel they're using. Hanhart being a German brand, this is a three-hand watch with central seconds. It's 39 millimeters. It is not interesting until you start to understand what HD12 is. HD12 is a steel with the tooling and the general qualities of 316L. However, it's harder and yet not brittle. Additionally, this watch has some sort of invisible DLC coating to make it even more scratch resistant. I don't know if this is going to be like a Zin not Baltic.
Traska.
Traska. Hardness coating. I just that don't fucking, know.
I've done things to try to break that coating, and I haven't been able to.
With that said, it's a 1,200 Vickers rated surface, meaning many, many, many times more resistant to scratches than 316. And it's gorgeous, Andrew. It's 39 millimeters. It's 10 and a half thick.
It's everything we want.
This is what the Murph probably always should have been. It's terrific. It comes in black. It comes in blue. They both look great. It doesn't have any faux tina on it.
An extra 200 euros will get you a PVD bracelet.
It comes on a bracelet for $1,000-ish. $1,100, I think.
$1,200.
Fine. It's terrific. I love it. I really, really, really like it. I think that this is one of the nicest watches that you can get for under $2,000. Is this as good as a Monta Triumph, which I'm wearing tonight? I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't know.
Hanhart makes really nice watches. I don't think this would be as nice as a Monta Triumph. Is it?
But if you don't get desk diving marks, is it? Does that compensate for the delta?
Maybe.
Right? Like every day you put on a brand new looking watch.
And it's less money than a Triumph. Is it as cool as a Murph? Yes, cooler. If you want to get a Murph and you don't actually care about the Murph connection, buy this because this is better and cooler and better looking. Is this as good as an IWC Mark 20? No.
Probably not.
But it's
more scratch resistant.
22% of the cost. Yeah. 20% of the cost. Maybe less than that. It's 17% of the cost of an IWC Mark 20.
Your watches cost $40,000?
It's awesome.
It's a really interesting release.
And because it's German, automatic is spelled with a K.
Automatic.
It's fantastic. I love it. I think that this is the most boring, most exciting watch of the week.
I think I am ready to end it on the most boring and most exciting, because that's kind of my style. Boring and exciting.
Andrew, other things, what do you got?
So I watched a show.
You need to get this Hanhart. It's a watch made for you.
It really is. So I saw this Coming Soon tile on the Netflix. Was intrigued by it. And 2 days ago, I clicked on it because it was available now. New release. Monsters. The Lyle and Eric Menendez story.
Oh.
Holy shit. It was terrific. So this is part...
This is a biopic, right?
Yeah, so it's a biopic. It is part due of Monsters from Netflix, which has been renewed for a third season. First season being The Dahmer, which was so good. Second season of this anthology is The Menendez Brothers, which is... just as good, but just slightly different, right? Because so the Dahmer story was kind of told chronologically, right? Like you get introduced to him and then you get kind of flash forwards and flashbacks. This was just a little bit differently told timeline story, but was so well acted, so terrific. I couldn't stop watching. Last night I was watching and I felt myself, I'm like, oh, I'm about to fall asleep. Mental timestamp. What are you watching? Like, what is happening in the show right now so that when you inevitably fall asleep and a couple episodes run, you can go back and know exactly where you missed it. And I did just that. I was like, okay, timestamp. Click, click. This is where I'm out. And then I went to sleep. And it was super funny because...
Some people just turn off the TV and go to bed.
No, I just tipped over. Because it was pretty early. It was like 8:30. It was funny because my wife was working at the time. She was sitting at the bar. And she's like, do you remember that scene last night? And I was like, not from last night. because I mental noted it that that was when I was going to fall asleep. She goes, oh no, I heard you start snoring. Like, yeah, no, I went out. But I went back and rewatched it. So yes, I'm fully caught up. It was terrific.
Right,
and they do in Monsters in this anthology show, they do a really good job of not like making a hero of these villains. Like they're really they make them relatable without making them like
likable.
Right. Like they're not anti-heroes in any capacity. It's like, no. These guys, like I see it. I accept it. You're human people.
They're not unnecessarily vilifying them, but they're also.
Yeah. Like you're a human and
you're fucked up.
You're fucked up.
Yeah.
And they do a really good job of that.
I haven't watched the Dahmer one, so I'll maybe have to.
The Dahmer one's super good.
Yeah.
They're both really good, and they do a really good job of, like, you don't fall in love with this villain, but you see not necessarily the why, but the what.
Yeah.
And hate them the entire time, but also you don't relate to them ever, but you kind of get it.
There's a bit of empathy involved in the process.
They do such a good job with that balance. They never make him an anti-hero. They never make him somebody that you'd want to be or somebody that you can relate to, but you can see it and without accepting it, tolerate it to the extent that, like, oh, okay. If I was there, I might be there too.
Sure. Cool. I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's really good.
Andrew, I've got another thing. You've got a relatively new car, right? What year is your car?
2014.
Okay.
So Sam's car is, I think, an 18. Okay. But my truck is a 14.
So I assume you don't have CarPlay in your car.
I have Sync. It's okay. Like Ford Play.
Does Sam's car have CarPlay?
It has a touch screen, and when I plug my phone into it, it immediately does the things that my phone is doing.
Well, so in my Lexus, I had a very nice aftermarket stereo that I had to get this Japanese thing to make work.
As would happen with a Japanese car.
It had CarPlay. The stereo that I bought, the aftermarket stereo, had wireless CarPlay. I would just get in my car, I'd turn it on, and it just CarPlay would come on, and it was awesome. You know, so I'm in this 2003 Lexus and fully modern stereo, both in terms of IO and, UI and in terms of sound. So it was great. I've noticed that many cars that were released in the last, say, 5 years have CarPlay, but they don't have wireless CarPlay. So both of our new cars, so our 2021 Highlander and now our Lexus, have CarPlay, but they don't have wireless CarPlay. So you've got to plug in.
It doesn't have a Bluetooth connect?
Not for CarPlay. I find that to be a little annoying. It's not the end of the world.
Dude, I drive 6 different Fords, like Ford Explorers, ranging in age, like 5 years of age. And when I get into that car, it grabs my Bluetooth immediately and starts playing my Bluetooth.
But not through CarPlay.
I don't know what CarPlay is, maybe.
CarPlay is an Apple product that is put on stereos, and it replicates your iPhone on the stereo. So when I would get into the Lexus, I would get in and it would just turn on, and it's my iPhone screen. I can see my iPhone apps, my podcast apps.
I don't have that.
I've got text message. I've got all my text messages. I can make calls. I've got my Maps app. It is like my phone projected onto my stereo. It's crippled a little bit, but it's just like your phone is on your stereo.
I've never had that.
CarPlay is awesome. But plugging in for CarPlay, I find to be a touch annoying. I recently, someone was telling me, well, they make these dongles and...
Dongles.
You can essentially plug it in and it turns your wired CarPlay into wireless CarPlay. And they work really well. They're relatively affordable.
It's like a little hotspot.
It's like a little hotspot. So I started researching these things and I found that like there's a lot of bad information. There's a lot of articles that you can tell are like, what's the word where someone's being paid for what they're writing? What's the phrase for this?
Sponsored.
Yeah, sponsored. There's a better word from it. They're affiliate, right?
Oh, yeah.
All these affiliate articles. It was really annoying to try to figure out which one of these. I eventually narrowed it down to a couple of products, and I went with one that seemed like the safest bet. So I purchased a product called...
I'm surprised you didn't go Anchor, just like right out the gate.
Well, I don't think Anchor makes one of these. So these companies are brands you don't really know. So I went with a company. This is from CarLinkit or CarLinkit. Maybe CarLink?
CarLinked.
CarLinkit? Anyway, I bought the CarLinkit 5.0 adapter, which is sort of the latest, greatest from the company called CarLinkit.
I think it's CarLinkit.
Well, the capitalization makes it look
no,
like...
No, I agree, because I think there's a English translation problem.
Perhaps. Anyway, supposedly this is the latest, greatest, best you can buy in terms of these dongles. I bought this thing. It took 3 days to get here from Amazon. I plugged it in. It brought up a screen. I connected my phone, and it just fucking works. So I've got this thing in the Highlander right now, and it's just... Andrew.
Is it just doing the things?
It just does the things. It was $65. I bought $66.20. I bought it on Amazon. It does both CarPlay and whatever the Android Auto. It does both of those.
If you're using an Android, fix yourself.
Well, whatever. I don't care. I don't have any sort of...
Quit wrecking group texts with your green messages.
I use Apple because it's what I use, but I think Androids are probably fine too. Anyway, this does both Android Auto and CarPlay. I obviously haven't used it with Android Auto, but I understand it works exactly the same. It's just perfect. It just works. I plugged it in. It took me about, 3 minutes to get this thing set up. It takes about 10 seconds to start up. When you start the car, you can tell it takes just a minute. But phone's in my pocket. I start the car. 10 seconds later, my phone is projected on the stereo, and it just works.
Does it work with multiple devices?
It does. It does. So not all of them do. That was one of the reasons that I clued in on this one, because I can use it with both Kim and I. And it defaults to the most recent connection. So if I'm driving and then I get out of the car and then both Kim and I get in the car, it'll hook up to mine. And vice versa. So if Kim drives and then we both get in the car, it hooks up to Kim. So it defaults to the last connection if it's got choices. It's like, that's the last one.
I like that one better.
Yeah. gosh, Andrew, it's terrific. It's one of these things. If you drive a 2021 car that's got wired CarPlay or Android Auto and you want that to be wireless, pick up this thing. It's good for a couple things. One, many, many modern cars have the stereo plug-in, which charges your car at like 1 point something, and then a couple of other USBs that charge your phone at more 2 point or 3 point amps or whatever. So if you are hooked up to this thing on Bluetooth, you want to charge, a lot of times you'll be able to charge faster than you would with the wired connection. Mm-hmm. And it just works. It just fucking works. Now, when I was reading the reviews of these things, I understand there's some latency that's created by this like third party. I haven't noticed any problems with latency with this thing. That was the big concern when I started reading these reviews, is that latency and sort of like swiping delays and timing delays, and sometimes the phone calls can get weird because of latency. I've had none of that. It is quick. It's snappy. It's automatic. It's perfect. So if you're looking for one of these things, $65, CarLinkit 5.0, Let me link in the show notes. I love it. And I'm not getting paid to say this. Mm-mm. In fact, I paid money to get one of these things. I love it.
It's doing the thing.
I haven't tried any others. So there might be ones that are better. But this one does all the things I wanted it to do.
And if there's things that are better, feel free to send them to Everett for free.
Andrew, anything you want to add?
I'm out of things.
Hey, you guys at home, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Do me a favor, go to our website. It's watchclicker.com. That's where we post every episode of this podcast, but also articles and reviews and other things about watches, mostly in written form. If you want to check us out on social media, you can search for at watchclicker or at 40 and 20 underscore watchclicker. There's stuff that goes on there sometimes. Mm-hmm. If you want to support us, and we really actually need you to support us, we need you to support us in order for us to keep doing this. Patreon.com/40and20. That is how we get the money to keep this thing going. The website, the podcast, everything. Support us. Patreon.com/40and20. And don't forget to tune back in next Thursday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.